Thank you. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, January 22nd, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, for which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in 1 Corinthians. We're looking at chapter 16, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 16. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. And when I come, whomsoever ye shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality unto Jerusalem. And if it be meet that I go also, they shall go with me. Now I will come unto you when I shall pass through Macedonia, for I do pass through Macedonia. And it may be that I will abide, yea, and winter with you, that ye may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go. For I will not see you now by the way, but I trust to tarry a while with you, if the Lord permit. But I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost. For a great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries. Now if Timotheus come, see that he may be with you without fear, for he worketh the work of the Lord as I also do. Let no man therefore despise him, but conduct him forth in peace, that he may come unto me, for I look for him with the brethren. As touching our brother Apollos, I greatly desired him to come unto you with the brethren, but his will was not at all to come at this time, but he will come when he shall have convenient time. Watch ye, stand fast in the faith. Quit you like men, be strong. Let all your things be done with charity. I beseech you, brethren, ye know the house of Stephanas, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints. That ye submit yourselves unto such, and to every one that helpeth with us and laboureth. I am glad of the coming of Stephanas and Fortunatus and Achaicus, for that which was lacking on your part they have supplied, for they have refreshed my spirit and yours. Therefore acknowledge ye them that are such. The churches of Asia salute you. Aquila and Priscilla salute you much in the Lord with the church that is in their house. All the brethren greet you. Greet ye one another with an holy kiss. The salutation of me, Paul, with mine own hand. If any man love not the Lord Jesus Christ, let him be anathema maranatha. The grace of our Lord Jesus Christ be with you. My love be with you all in Christ Jesus. Amen.
Hey,
the end of the first epistle of Paul the Apostle to the Corinthians.
Hi, Jan. Do we have any questions tonight, any announcements?
We have a bunch, John. The first is not really a question. Maybe you can give us some thoughts on it. A fellow by the name of Tori Morass is inviting we the people to sign our names to the amicus brief that is prepared to be filed in support of the Supreme Court case against the Colorado Supreme Court, which overstepped its jurisdiction to decide to remove President Trump from the ballot. Is that something we should be supporting?
Well, you know, I'm not too worried about those things because I think everything's going to go well in the court case. I think the plan for saving this republic from the perspective of at least taking it back and giving it back to the people, I think is pretty much going to happen. I think it's going to happen this year. But doesn't mean we wouldn't want to think and talk about it. So if this individual, is this a group of people or just an individual? Or who is this?
Individual.
All right. Well, if they make contact with us directly, I don't know if you have a phone. I don't know if they're listening in or what, but, you know, we can make contact and maybe pass my number to them and, you know, we can talk a little bit. Actually, we probably should get together with a couple people and see what they got first as far as the paperwork is concerned, and then see what their strategy is, what their thoughts are, and then we'll try to make a decision what we might do. But, you know, we do plan to go in to take back the courts as soon as devolution plays to a certain part. So I guess that's about it on that. Next.
Okay, the next has to do with irrevocable trusts, and it has three parts. Do you want all three at once?
Yeah, I'll stop you if it's getting real too.
Okay. Are there charges to put our business in an irrevocable trust? Two, what happens after the business is put into the trust? And three, what else do I need to learn about any changes that need to be made?
Well, I don't necessarily know the details. Repeat the first part of that. What's the first question?
Are there any charges, any costs to put our business into an irrevocable trust?
Well, not really. If you're going to do it without a lawyer, obviously there's no legal fees. We do have information, quite a bit of information, on this particular page found under, I don't know if they know about this, but it's found under Education Starts Here, come down to the law, and then click on Court Forms and Process. Let's see how far down. I know there's Common Law Trust. There's a lot to learn about it, a lot to put together. But there is no charge to do it if you're going to do it yourself. The only fee would be a lawyer's fee. You're going to want to file it with the county and the records. And of course, you use your paperwork to open up the accounts accordingly. So I guess that's about it.
Okay. The next question is, I listened to your talk on Justice Gorsuch's notice, but do you know where it came from? Was it the Supreme Court records or somewhere else?
Well, I got this. I'm not sure exactly how I found this website. I think someone sent me an email possibly, and I went to this website. It was a lawyer's website. And I pulled it off of that particular website. I did get a call from someone who was trying to find that case. It was a case with the same name that goes back, I think, in the 50s, well, quite some time ago anyway. I don't think that was the case. You know, there are many cases out there. Sometimes you get the same name, so you got to, of course, put your numbers in. So I don't know if they check the numbers. I haven't had a chance to go out to actually check that case out. We do have a copy of the information. I did trust that the information was correct. I do believe it's correct. It's pretty powerful. But I'll report next week after I have a chance to dig into it and actually find the case. Now, the case itself, to my knowledge or realization, from understanding from reading on that page and what we put together, it wasn't that order was not put into that case. But after that case, or in response to that case, that's when Gorsuch put out a judicial notice. And it was a very powerful judicial notice, as we saw. But I'm going to dig a little deeper into that. I do trust that that does exist, but it's not inside the case the way as far as I understand it.
Okay. There has been some conjecture surrounding the term of office for the President of the United States. People claim that Donald Trump cannot hold 8 years in office since he had already served a 4-year term previously, and try to support their claims with examples such as other past presidents would rerun and seek another 8 years. From what I understand, that as long as the terms are not consecutive, that the president-elect could be afforded 8 years total pending re-election after the first 4-year non-consecutive term, regardless of their past time in office. Could NLA please clarify this?
Well, you know, again, I know it was Washington that refused the third term and was trying to make a principle. It's been a principle all the way up to Roosevelt. I know Roosevelt, I think Roosevelt had, what, 3 terms? Or he was beginning his 4th, I think. And I don't know if Congress did anything to try to create a law on that. I don't think they did. It's just I don't recall that they had. So there really is no law. Nevertheless, the standard principle is that it's 8 years, period. So Trump will come in for 4 years. I'm sure that'll happen. But he's not going to run for the next 4 years. Again, getting back to principle. Once the enemies, both foreign and particularly domestic, are, you know, dealt with appropriately, lawfully, justly, then at that point, of course, you know, well, Trump would come in and make the repairs. It's going to be up to the people to receive the republic. And of course, you know, the republic requires, you know, our time to put into it in order that we can have that republic. You know, knowledge is the key. James Madison said, knowledge will forever govern ignorance. And a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power knowledge gives. So as long as the people do their job by getting active at the grassroots level and start to exercise the unalienable right of government by consent, then all is well. But I don't think Trump will even consider running for. As a matter of fact, though, he'll be a 3-term president anyway, because I do believe he's still president of the United States, and I think the resident in the White House is the president of the United States Inc. And I do think that President Trump at this point has control over the military. There's an agreement on that because of subversion. If Trump didn't come into office, and if it was anyone else, and especially if the Democrats had won that, we wouldn't even be here talking anymore. But it's up to the people to secure the republic. So it's up to them to do that. We'll see.
John, the 22nd Amendment starts out, no person shall be elected to the office of president more than twice.
Wow, okay. I didn't even realize that. Okay, so there you go. But in this case, you know, for every rule, there is it could be broken, you know, under extenuating circumstances. And I think these are extenuating circumstances. So with that said, I don't think, you know, the next term. And again, people probably don't even realize it. Most people don't realize it anyway, but they will realize it at some point. Nothing would be said. The salvation of the republic is the most important thing, and I do believe we're going to accomplish that. But can the American people keep it? That's the key. All right, any other questions?
Yes. We are in a huge lawsuit against our city for withholding and deleting public records in Washington State. Extreme government corruption is being exposed. We don't have any support because the attorneys all want to take the case from us for the media attention or exploit us for exorbitant lawyer fees. Anyone who has experience with these lawsuits who could offer us some support would be appreciated.
Yeah, well, we're up against evil. You know, they're going to maintain the status quo. It's very rare to get a judge that won't, and if they don't accept the status quo and maintain that status quo, then I don't think they're going to be a judge for very long. They've got total control of the judiciary, just like they got total control of the Congress, and they had control of the presidency to a large degree. And let me think about this. I think, again, you know, to go forward with a case, depending on the case, I mean, sometimes the case you have to go forward with. I've had some cases I prefer waiting, but I had to go forward with them early. And we've done many cases, hundreds of cases we've got in the Supreme Court, particularly in the federal judiciary, shall I say, really. And that purpose of all those cases, we were trying to help people, of course, in particularly in saving their homes and also in habeas corpuses. But again, there was another motive behind all that by doing that work while trying to help the people, and that is to build a case against the federal judiciary. We did file papers in the United States Supreme Court on two occasions, but we didn't file it the way they want us to file it. And we have a clerk out there that's been blocking it. And maybe that's a good thing, because we've given some time to rewrite it, and we're going to approach it in a different way as soon as devolution takes a larger play in this and we've seen that we can get anywhere in the courts. But we're going to need rest first. Got to get rid of a lot of judges. But the bottom line is really we're looking for an indictment on the federal judiciary, the entire federal judiciary. And again, it's all done from a common law perspective. So as far as the case that's being brought up, again, it might be wise, if possible, to wait until, you know, the courts finally get to that point where we can go up against them and bring back courts of justice. Because right now we don't have courts of justice. They subverted our Bill of Rights. They subverted our common law courts. They've subverted even our political process. So it's very difficult to get anything through the courts. There is some hope coming up very soon. But again, what I would do, if it's a case that has to go forward, okay, keep it common law focused and try to pull yourself out of the civil law. The other thing is to look into the record of the judges hearing the case. And again, it depends on the case and different things. And if it's a common law case, then no judge belongs in that courtroom as far as making any decisions, only a magistrate to act only as a traffic cop, for instance, keep things going. And other than that, but unfortunately, these judges take total control on a federal level. And a lot of times, even a lot of cases that they do hear and they take control of, they don't even have the authority to even take them into the federal courts. But they do anyway. But again, with this particular case, I don't know enough of the details. If they wanted to talk to me, we can look at it and talk to them about it.
I have a case in the Missouri State Circuit Court demanding a trial jury. Can a judge dismiss parties and claims if I demanded a jury trial, and can you direct me to rule and or law regarding this question?
Sure, and under the common law, they can't. That doesn't mean they won't, because they don't even obey their own rules. They'll apply their rules, which is damaging to us quite often. There are some rules, of course, that are good. But even when you use their rules against them, when the rules are on your side, they'll discard them anyway and change the rules and do whatever they please. So it's real difficult to... And especially in the federal courts. But the key thing here is the Seventh Amendment, where we read, in suits of common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right, it's an unalienable right, it's the Seventh Amendment, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States, then according to the rules of the common law. And thereby, you know, the whole process is common law and the rules of the common law. And, of course, if it's a criminal charge, then they have to go with a common law process and a jury, so they can't deny that. What kind of a court are they in, do they say? Federal court, state court, or what?
It's a state circuit court.
Okay. You could do is, and you could have some success with this, if they deny you a jury, a trial by jury, then that's a denial of due process. And you can take that to the federal court. And just on the issue of due process, you're not going to argue your case there. And depending on the case, if it's unlawful and if it's statutory and they have no power or authority over you, in other words, they don't have personam jurisdiction, then you can, in your wherefore clause, you can demand that they, not only can you go after them for violating your right of due process, which you could get compensated for that, but also you can have the court rule to deny that court to continue. In your wherefore clause, you'd want to put that you're moving for the court to cease and desist. But again, I don't know the details of the case, so I don't even know what it's really about.
Okay, this next one is really long, John. I'm in a court case where the county is taking me to court under municipal code saying they are laws. The magistrate did not even read the constitutional law section, Article 1, Section 10, that I gave him. The plaintiff gave the magistrate testimony before the trial even started. When it went to common pleas court, I asked the judge, is it a criminal case or civil case? He looked at the ceiling, nodding his head left to right, and did not answer me. A few minutes later, he introduced me to the district DA, or assistant DA, saying he came from the DA's office. At this point, I know I'm in criminal court, but they will not tell me to this day. Naturally, finding me guilty to pay a garbage bill that I never owed or used because I never set any garbage out, didn't have any to set out, don't have any. I never had my Miranda rights read to me, nor have I been in front of a jury trial, nor was I offered counsel if I couldn't afford one. I also have been fighting with Commonwealth Court over the probate of this house. Someone they won't tell me who they are has been ordering me and threatened me with PA code CS 42, which says that I'm advertising as an attorney for hire, which I really am an attorney in fact. My question is, can the government do this, use municipal codes, turn him into law, and then take me to court under common pleas court?
Well, you know, again, they're claiming to be an attorney, this person.
So that's what he says, he's an attorney.
Okay, well, then they should know the law. Yeah, they should know the law. Unfortunately, they don't know the common law. So if they're looking to really kind of move over to the common law process, then they have to open up a court of record, sue back and move it into federal court for cause for denial of due process and being hijacked into jurisdictions unknown. Because if they're using statutes or codes against you, that has nothing to do with you. That's equity. And equity is only, and that too has to go as far as through the process of common law, even equity courts. They have to be in harmony with the maxims of law, maxims at law. The only thing you could do is move it to federal court for cause and sue them for, hijacking you into jurisdictions unknown and denying due process. But I would try to first do a writ of error in there. But again, that could be dangerous. It's a very simple thing. I mean, it doesn't sound like anything anyone would go to jail for, but it sounds like they're trying to push the maxim on it, and who knows what these people are going to do or would like to do. And what court is he in again? I know you've mentioned...
Well,
Common Plea Court or
Commonwealth
something?
Commonwealth Court. He had different places. Common Pleas Court.
And was he in Pennsylvania, do you know?
Yeah, he's in Pennsylvania.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm not too sure of the structure of those courts, but again, they're statutory. They have nothing to do with we, the people. Of course, it's an uphill battle. You may not or probably won't. Well, you could. You could possibly win in the federal courts, possibly, but not likely. But the key thing to it is really pushing for the time to get to the other side, and so that would really be the key thing. So, again, common law is the key. So if they don't know the common law, they should come take the course we have, which is court access in the common law. And if they're a lawyer, they'll be able to go through this quite quickly because a lot of it is teaching the due process, which due process, the way things go, is correct. The problem is that we have criminals in charge and maintaining status quo. And, of course, that causes a problem for the people. So.
Okay. I have one comment for the evening, John. As you know, last Wednesday, you had an interview with SGN on. Going back to December, we have normally about 10 new members a week. And that was the Christmas holiday, so it may not be that accurate for the rest of the year. Since the SGN on interview, we had 28 new members that identified that they were on the call or had listened to it, and we had a total of 102 for that week. So it's like 10 times the normal amount of members, new members that we normally would have after the interview, which I think is great.
Well, absolutely, and we did kind of expect that. I mean, you know, we've been kind of under the radar, so to speak, for quite some time, and I think it's time to really for things to take a real big move, a big jump, and this is probably going to be the thing that's going to give us that boost. So again, we are going to be having another interview. I think we're probably going to have at least two more, shall I say, because we had one, so it'll be three altogether. I know the next time we get together with SG might be sometime this week. And we're probably going to focus in particularly on exactly what National Liberty Alliance does and what our major plan is. And then the next after that would be the education and political process and, you know, what we're doing to take back the courts. But we'll probably discuss a lot of that in the next one anyway. So we'll be talking about the committees of safety. We'll be talking about the common law grand juries, the administrations for that, and the unified United States common law grand jury, the political process, the problems with the bar, and how we're going to go forward to deal with that problem. As a matter of fact, on the other side of things, no bar attorney can operate in a court. They'll have to leave their bar in order to practice law in our courts because of the original 13th Amendment. And, of course, the purpose of the bar ultimately is to really destroy our courts of justice, and they've done a pretty good job on that. They've been working on that for a long, long time. They started all the way back in 1750, while we were still prior to becoming states, you know. So, we'll see how things go, but that's what we're going to be doing next. I think we'll get a lot more people that will probably respond and we'll see how things go, you know. But we are looking for that critical mass. We need that critical mass to be successful. And we know it'll come sooner or later. This may be the soon. Anything else?
Nope, that'll do it, John. That's all I have.
Thank you. All right, I got a couple of things. I'd like to make a couple of announcements. Maybe so often we do bring this up. Asking people to join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Which is buy your sheriff the book, Government by Consent. And to get information on that, you can come up to Sheriff and just come down one box and click on Join Our Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. You can get a lot of information on this book here, and you know, click here to buy the book. It'll take you directly to make the purchase. And we do ask that you do download the two letters that are in here, one from Sheriff Dar and one from National Liberty Alliance. Fold them up, put it in a book, and send it to your sheriff. You can take it to him personally or however you want to do it. But we have to educate our sheriffs. And sometimes I hear people say, oh, my sheriff's no good. He's this, that, or the other thing. And maybe so. And that could be out of ignorance. It could be out of a lot of things. You know, if he gets a hold of the book is a necessity in order for him to understand who he really is. Because the book has an entire chapter on sheriffs. And we got a lot of information in there. How the sheriff came to be, how they crossed the Atlantic, and their powers and authorities, chief law enforcer of the county. They have the final word when it comes to law in the county. If the feds come in, they can kick them out. And as a matter of fact, any time a fed comes into a county, sheriffs don't know this, but they should. Maybe some do, but they don't. But whenever feds come into a county, they are supposed to make notification to the sheriff and show the sheriff the papers, and the papers should participate in the deliverance of that paperwork, because really, serving papers is not for the feds, it's for the sheriff. And the sheriff could say no. And a highly educated sheriff, according to the common law, educated in the common law and in the Constitution, which is what we teach and which is what this book will give them the knowledge of, they'll be able to get the backbone. Because knowledge will give them the backbone. But they also need sheriffs to back them up. You know, you got to get, it's not just one county. We have to get sheriffs in every county or most counties to really come to an understanding of their power and authority and start to really execute the law. And so, you know, we need collectively to work on this project. Now, there are a lot of sheriffs, and well, I wouldn't say there's a lot. You know, there's a couple of states that all sheriffs do have the books. But it's not a big deal if someone else has already done it. Let them have two books, let them have three books, that's fine. They all have an undersheriff and other individuals. You know, every sheriff's department usually has someone in the sheriff's department that has a decent background in the law, maybe a paralegal, maybe even a lawyer. But they do have some background and knowledge of the law, and it'd be good for that sheriff to get it too, because well, that would be a deputy, of course. But in any event, it would be good for them to get it too, because again, we need to get the knowledge out to the people. So, and also for your committees of safety, you need to get the sheriff involved with your committee of safety, and we do have a plan for that, a process. And we have a handbook for that. You can find that up on Start a Committee of Safety. Come down to Handbooks, Videos, and Tools, and you can download the book, Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook. And so you can download this. This is a PDF copy, 8.5 by 11. We do also have these in pocket handbooks, and those could be found under the Welcome tab. You can come down to Books by John Duresh. And these are the handbooks that we did put up on Amazon. I don't know, of course, it depends on which book, but I think it's between $5 or $6. So if you wanted one that's a pocket handbook, it's nice and convenient, that's fine. But we also have it for free. So you can download all those handbooks are for free. As a matter of fact, you can download in PDF form. The handbooks are really just convenience. So if people go through this and run, and this is a step-by-step process. That's what this handbook does, is it teaches the people how to have a step-by-step process in order to create a committee of safety, how to form it, how to grow it. And we have more things to add, how we can then you know, start to take control of particular boards within our counties. I hear a lot of problems, a lot of people talking about it. The boards ignore them, particularly not just town boards and city boards and other political boards, but also educational boards. We have a process that we can teach where you can remove every single person on that board within 10 days if they don't obey the law and respond to the people. So we're going to teach people that too. I think that'll be something we'll probably add to this handbook. Or maybe we'll make it something a little separate from that and, again, post it where people can get to it. So Let's see what else we have here. I did see a couple of things out there with some course problems. I guess the videos take a long time to open up on some people's computers, for whatever reason that is. I have noted, you know, we use Rumble. We used to use YouTube, going back a couple of years now, though, of course. But, you know, YouTube did react quickly, quicker than I noticed. And maybe they slowed down, too, but I noticed that whenever I play a video on Rumble, it takes maybe 30 seconds or so before the video will start playing. And I imagine for some people it might take a little longer. So that being the case, I guess you've got to sit and wait. But there may be a problem if people are trying to get into the course, maybe using smartphones or tablets. Do you know anything about that, Jan, if that could be a problem in itself?
There is a problem, and I haven't figured out what it is. It takes up to 2 or 3 minutes for the first video you click on to load. After that, they start right up, and I haven't figured that one out yet. It's because of the embed code and establishing the video connection through our NLA site, but I haven't been able to figure out how to get away from that.
No, that would be on their side. That'd be on Rumble's side. That's nothing we can control.
Okay.
All we can do is post to
That's right. The
embed, and it takes place. And we've been doing that for many, many years now. And I do notice that things have been slowed down, generally speaking, at least on on Rumble. But we don't have any. Well, we do have a couple of YouTube videos that are still embedded. We still have an account that they haven't shut down, and so we do have some videos there. But anyway, maybe there's something. Have you Googled? I hate to use that word, Google. Have you put a search in? Because I don't even use Google anymore.
No, I haven't really pursued it yet. I wasn't up to that point yet.
Because I think it's on their side. If you Google, again, back to that Google bit.
I'll duck, go it.
Search it. You may find that there's a response to that problem, and maybe it's just common. I think it is common, to be honest with you. But anyway. Okay, let's see. There was another thing I wanted to bring up. Okay, look, there's been some talk about some potential EMP attacks and a concern for solar flares. I was looking a little bit into this. I know next year the sun's going to become very active, but I just read on a report, it says the sun will reach the peak of its current activity cycle in 2024, 1 year earlier than previously estimates. According to experts at NOAA Space Weather Prediction Center, eruptions on the sun surface and sunspots are expected to multiply and intensify throughout this year as our yellow star enters its most active period in 2 decades. I don't know if many people know about this. I know, a lot of NLA members know about it, but we do have some new people coming in. But President Trump did something about this problem. It's been sitting around for a long time. An EMP could shut down the entire United States. If two or three are strategically, nuclear bombs, that is, were strategically exploded in our atmosphere in strategic areas, it would take out the entire United States. But President Trump in 2017 or 2018, I forget which one it is, I think it was 2018, he engaged a particular organization group or business, whatever you want to call it, to find a solution. And they did find a solution. And they accomplished that solution in 2019. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but our grid is now protected. And it's been protected for at least a couple of years now, since at least 2019. Well, probably 2020, 2021. Probably the whole grid has been protected. Now, all of the electric companies were notified of this problem with the EMP, and they were to notify their clients, all of us that have electric, obviously. They were to notify the people and let the people know that there is an option to protect their homes. Because the grid is protected, that's one thing, but your home is not protected. So if we get hit with an EMP, anything electrical in your home is just going to be totally destroyed. Computers, even whether they're plugged in or not, you know, unless you have these things in a Faraday cage, they're going to be destroyed. But anything, if you put this EMP protector on your electric box down in wherever that's at, you know, then you will have your entire home protected. Anything plugged in will also be protected, and also protects against electrical strikes. Now, you can read about this on this page. On the left-hand side of our website, you'll find an icon here and a link for solar flare and EMP protector. And on this page, we lay out... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not on that page. Let me click it. Okay, there we go. Electromagnetic pulse protector. Okay, there's a lot of information here. There's information on the company that designed this particular protector. And you get all the information I just told you on videos here by the company particularly that came out and created this whole process. It's a very simple thing. It takes about 15 minutes to install it. You know, you don't have to well, if you don't know anything about electricity, you definitely don't want to touch that electrical box. But if you have some basic electrical understanding and you shut the box off, you could do it yourself. I know I did mine. I put one in my car because your car is going to fry too if we had one. So I put one in my car. I got one in my generator, and I got one in my home. So people should consider this. I do want to play a short 5-minute clip, but there's a lot of videos here that people will really need to look at and see what's going on, understand the problem, understand the solution, and then make the decision of what they're going to do. So let me just play this. It's a 5-minute video. We're going to play this, and I think this is the last thing we're going to be looking at, and then we'll open up for anybody who has a question or comment, which, by the way, the queue is open. If anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's a *6 and 1. If you've got an app, there should be a button to get into that queue. Okay, so meanwhile, let's watch this 5-minute clip. See how long it's taken to load? This is up on Rumble. This has never happened before, but I know it's a lot special.
Some people ask the question, what is the biggest disaster of 2012 if we had a crystal ball? Well, first of all, let me tell you what's probably not going to happen in 2012. We're probably not going to see Armageddon, Doomsday, the end of the world, the apocalypse, even if you look at the Mayan calendar. Now, if you look at the calendars of many indigenous peoples, you realize that their calendars were cyclic because they were very close to Mother Nature, very close to the cycles of the weather, the cycles of the planet, and therefore one cycle ends and another cycle begins. Unfortunately, I think Westerners saw something, hijacked it, realized they could make best-selling books by talking about the end of the world, and the thing began to have a life of its own. So let's take a look at some of these prophecies. One says that perhaps another planet from outer space will come near the Earth, disrupt the whole solar system. Well, let's be blunt about this. We don't see anything out there at all. In fact, you have to go way beyond Pluto before you find objects that are the size of Pluto, and they are billions upon billions of miles in outer space. So we're not going to expect to see that happen. Another group of people say that perhaps the Earth aligns with the center of the Milky Way galaxy where there's a black hole. Well, just remember that that happens once a year. And the black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy is tens of thousands of light years away from us, and we simply orbit in a stable orbit around the black hole. Now, one danger, however, that we have to look at more carefully than before is the question of catastrophic solar flares. That's something that has been poo-pooed, but we now realize it's actually more dangerous than we previously thought. If you take a look at the record, if you go back to 1859, that is the famous Carrington event. Carrington was an astronomer. He noticed unusual activity on the sun, and then all hell broke loose on the planet Earth with regards to telecommunications, specifically telegraph wires. All of a sudden, telegraph wires that were dormant sprung to life and would transmit signals all by themselves. Some places, fires got started because telegraph wires were overloaded. The aurora borealis, usually seen near the North Pole, was seen over Cuba, for God's sake. And it turns out that you could read the newspaper at night in Cuba by the light of the Northern Lights. Well, I'm a physicist. We can then use these bits of information to go backwards and calculate the intensity of that solar flare. And the coronal mass ejection was incredible. In fact, if it were to happen today, which it won't, but if it were to happen today, it would wipe out most of our satellites, short-circuit their machinery. We would black out our weather satellites, GPS systems, telecommunications, the internet. Power stations would be vulnerable. They would also be short-circuited and wiped out, not just in one city where other cities come to the rescue, but in cities simultaneously across the entire planet Earth. Refrigeration would be knocked out for perhaps weeks at a time. There could be food riots as a consequence. Ordinary simple business transactions would be halted because you can't make a credit card transaction because the telephone wires are out. Society as we know it would be thrown back perhaps 100 years into the past. Now, of course, we don't expect another Carrington event to take place every year. But every 11 years, the North Pole and the South Pole of the Sun flip. When the North Pole and the South Pole of the Sun flip, it releases a burst of electromagnetic energy called the sunspot cycle that then eventually hits the Earth. We now know that if you look at the solar activity of the Sun, these solar sunspots are like rifles, and they will eject huge bursts of energy like a rifle. But the Earth is very small, and outer space is huge. So for the most part, we dodged the bullet. But going back in the history books, we now realize that many times in the past, the Earth came close to being hit. In fact, just a few months ago, one of these bullets grazed the planet Earth, did not hit us. So the physicists of the American Physical Society, my organization, an organization of about 30,000 physicists in the United States, have petitioned the United States Congress to spend a few $100 million reinforcing our satellites, creating redundant systems, reinforcing our power stations, building the protocols by which we can create an electronic infrastructure that would withstand another Carrington event. No one knows when the next Carrington event will take place. Maybe in 1,000 years, maybe in the next solar cycle, which begins in late 2012. Who knows? It's Russian roulette, but it means that our society as we know it is potentially endangered. We are sitting ducks to a potential giant solar flare.
All right. Anyway, well, obviously that was done quite a few years ago. He was looking at 2012. The next, flip of the sun, so to speak, is going to be in 2025. But actually, they're saying now it's a year early, so it's 2024. Since then, also the satellites have been hardened. I don't know about the ones that have been up there, but I do know all of the Tesla, or most of the Tesla satellites have been hardened. And any other satellite that's been put up into orbit has been hardened and protected from solar flares. As a matter of fact, about a year, maybe 2 years ago, I think it was maybe a year ago, Tesla, they send out about 20 at a time. He's blanketing the Earth with satellites. And again, he was contracted also out. And really, that's really focused in on military. But he's also looking to deal with giving the people free internet and different services on those same satellites. But anyway, about a year ago, roughly speaking, he sent up about 20 satellites and as they were coming off into orbit and being dropped off and being turned on and taking its place on wherever it needs to be, we were hit with a small solar flare, nothing that disturbed the Earth particularly, and at least I haven't heard anything about that. But 20 satellites were lost in that event, only because they were not yet in a position, a mode set to be protected at that point in time. So it is a serious problem. People need to think about their homes. They need to think about their computers. And if you don't get an EMP, and you're going to want to really protect your hard drives, get a backup, and for just a couple of bucks, you can go up to Amazon And you can buy an EMP bag. They've got all kinds of different sizes. They've got sizes that just fit, that will fit an entire computer in, and others that will fit as small as, the small hard drives that are out there now. So anyway, people need to think about that. Okay, with that, I guess we're going to go to take some questions. Let me move over to the board here. And again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, it's star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. There should be a button to get into the queue if you have an app. Those people coming in on phones, I strongly suggest that consider downloading the app onto your smartphone if that's what you have. If you got a computer, you can do the apps. You can also come in here just on a browser. If you go up to our Monday Night Call tab, which is right here, top left side, which everybody should know about because that's how you found your way here. But there are details on how you can download the app, or you can come straight in on a browser. So however you want to do it. Okay, let's take our first call. Let's see. Okay, we got Kathy. How you doing, Kathy? And Kathy from Iowa, it looks like. Good to see you. Long time. You got the mic. Well, maybe you're not. Let me try to unmute you another way. How's that, Kathy? You take the mic now.
Thank you. Well, I've got a... I was supposed to have court today, but the judge granted me a continuance for 2 weeks. But this is on that alleged broken windshield situation. There are so many discrepancies that it's just unbelievable. I don't even know where to start. Can you tell me a couple of things?
Let me ask you a question before you ask those questions.
Yep. Thank you.
Is there any damages other than the windshield? Is there some extenuating?
No damages.
So what are
no damages.
What are they coming out after you for?
They're claiming that I failed to give my insurance. That's what they're, let me try to find this.
Right, but you had mentioned that.
They're saying I failed to give my insurance. This is the charge. Charge description. That at the time and place above alleged, the above named defendant did, having driven a motor vehicle involved in an accident within 72 hours after the accident, shall give, on request of any individual involved in the collision or to peace officer investigating the collision, the name and address of the insurer providing vehicle liability insurance and coverage and the local insurance agent for the insurer. Now, when I talked to you about a month ago, at that hearing in December, they reduced the charges from a misdemeanor to a petty misdemeanor. A misdemeanor would have given me a jury trial. So they reduced the charges to a petty misdemeanor so that I no longer get a jury trial, but I can... The whole thing I've been trying to do for 4 years now is question my accuser, on the stand. So that's what the hearing today was supposed to be, but I requested a continuance because I didn't get my, I was supposed to have my notice of witness in 2 weeks before today's hearing. That would have been on January 8th, and I didn't get that information into the courts in time. So I requested a continuance. He gave me a continuance till February 12th, and my witness list, notice of witness has to be in next Monday, a week from today. So,
is there a sworn affidavit describing?
This is very confusing because there's a year in between. This incident allegedly happened in 2020. It allegedly happened on February 18th, 2020. There's discrepancies in the documents that they gave me, one document says it happened at 12:30 on the citation itself.
All right, so we don't need to get into all those details, but I'll give you a couple of things you're going to want to think about. Number one, you're going to want to see the detailed, affidavit, a sworn affidavit. Was there a police report or was there an individual on the vehicle that made an affidavit? And if I recall, you and I spoke, well, we spoke about this a couple of times, but if I recall, basically you didn't even know anything had happened until they contacted you. Am I correct in my...
That's correct. The reporting party even stated in her report that she didn't think I was aware that this happened.
Okay. Well, I never heard of a, what did you call it, a small misdemeanor? What did you call that?
Petty misdemeanor.
Petty misdemeanor. Okay, well, I guess they can put that together like that. All right, well, in any event, being a misdemeanor, it's still considered a crime, and you have a right to a jury, period, in the subject. Now, I know that the courts don't recognize that. And again, the only thing you could do with that particular problem is really move it to federal court for cause. And the only thing you just see, the only thing you're going to argue in that federal court is not that case, but you're going to argue the cause. And the cause is a denial of due process. Denied due process if they refuse to give you a jury. That's key. The other thing, if there is no sworn affidavit, there is no case, and so you want to make mention to that too, because therefore you've been hijacked again into jurisdictions unknown to begin with, and there's no without an affidavit, a sworn affidavit by the complaining party, there is no case, and again, you're guaranteed in either case a trial by jury. If it's a misdemeanor, you're definitely guaranteed, because that's considered a criminal case. And if it's a civil case, as if it's over $20, then you're guaranteed a jury also. That's the Seventh Amendment, so they can't deny that. So, of course, let's take a look at the amendment, and we'll give you...
Can I just tell you a few of the really glaring problems?
Let me just finish this point, though, because it's good not only for you to know, but for others to hear and know also. We read the Seventh Amendment, okay? But it's the Fifth Amendment, okay, that is protecting you. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime. Now, capital or infamous crime is one that is potentially a jail sentence, and I think that's what you're concerned with, because they're calling it a petty misdemeanor. Are they looking at 90 days in jail or something?
I have been arrested once. They issued 3 warrants.
This applies.
I was arrested.
Okay, then that makes it a crime. This applies to you. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on the presentment or an indictment of a grand jury. Have you been indicted? I'm sure you haven't been. Number one.
No.
And let's read on, though. Except in cases arising in land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service of time at war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Due process of law is a court of record. Court of record, one that proceeds according to the common law. And so they need to get an indictment. Now, these are the issues, okay, that you move into a federal court. I know you took the course, and I don't know how you feel about things yet, but we do have examples on moving cases into federal court. We talk very specifically about being very careful. You don't want to if you discuss anything about that case, the Fed's going to throw it out and say, we're not going to hear this case. We don't have the jurisdiction. The only jurisdiction they have is the violation of the Constitution. And with particularly the Bill of Rights, the Fifth and the Seventh Amendment. So again, once you get in there, you're going to want to put in your wherefore clause. Not only you're going to be looking for damages against them because you want to sue for money because you have to be restored to all that they put you through, but also, you want to get in there the clause that you want that case to cease and desist. Why? Because there is no grand jury. There is no indictment. And they moved you into court, and they're not capable of giving you a court of record. So that court is not able to hear the case at all. Now, they do it all the time. They put people in jail all the time. They take their money all the time. And people go and they just yield to them because they're ignorant to the facts. And that's why everybody needs to learn the common law, at least just the basics. And you should be able to defend yourself. But anyway, that's what I strongly suggest for you to do at this point. You've got 2 weeks. Use that time to write a paper. And if you write a paper and if you get it to me, I'll take a look at it and give you some thoughts on it. But you should get it in right away. And that'll shut that case down and move it into the federal court for cause. Now, remember, you want to...
Okay, when you say write a paper,
could you
be real specific?
Yes, you want to get into the paper. It's very short and sweet. Should only be a couple of pages. We have examples in the court, in the class that you took. But there is a specific part of the chapter that talks about moving to federal court for cause. Follow that procedure. Very, very simple. It lays out the paperwork, what documents are needed, what forms. You have to have a notice of the notice concerning the case. You want to just make these bullet point notes that you want to get into this thing. Number one, they hijacked you into jurisdictions unknown. You don't even know what jurisdiction is. Using statutes to begin with has nothing to do with you, but to some degree, there is a situation here, but it's not criminal. But in any event, that's number one. The other thing you want to get in there is to talk and make the point that this is a violation of your Fifth Amendment and your Seventh Amendment. So those are the three things, and which is due process. So those are the three things that you want to make the point in your paper. And your wherefore clause, again, for whatever cost or injury that you might have gone through. I've talked about rule of thumbs on how you might go forward for injuries as far as, what it would be in a cost factor as far as to restore you.
Well, this cost me the whole probate case in Iowa because there was a hearing on this, the same day there was a probate hearing in Iowa. Okay, and well, I requested in okay. Iowa that
okay, well, again,
my lawyer...
Hold on. Okay.
I requested a continuance. The judge did not give me a continuance.
Okay.
And the case was...
I remember all that. So here's what you want to do. In your affidavit, you want to not only make the point concerning your sworn statement on the case, as far as what's going on with, again, due process. You're not going to get involved in the case itself. Because you're going to, in your wherefore clause, it's going to be a cease and desist because they don't have authority. They don't have jurisdiction over you. They don't have personam jurisdiction. They violated your right of due process. They don't have a court of record. All these things mount up together, okay? But in your affidavit, you want to make that point of your damages, that you've been damaged, you've been injured, and that you had two cases going, another case at the same time. They wouldn't put things off. You were forced to go there, and you lost that one there, and and you can then seek the damages you think that you lost there also, combined, of course, with whatever time damages or pain, suffering, or whatever you think you went through. But that's up to you to figure out, but you do have to make a case, and you'd make that in your affidavit. Then, of course, in your wherefore clause, you're going to put in the total price of what it is, and your affidavit is going to be there to support that, and then you see where it goes. So that's what I suggest that you do. I mean, there's nothing more I can tell you about
okay.
it. Because, again, I can't help you in the battling of that case because I don't know anything else. But you want to just shut it down. Now, you do have a good chance of shutting it down in the federal courts because, to some degree, it is a status quo thing, but it's not as big an issue as other things, and it probably will. Again, you're going to want to see whatever judge takes the case over there. You want to look into the – you can just Google their name and where they're at and discover that judge and look into their background and find out.
There's been a different judge at every hearing. They've never had the same judge. There's been a different judge at every hearing.
Kathy, I'm talking about the judge that you're going to get if you move it to federal court. As soon as you move it to federal court, they'll give you a judge. They'll put it on the record there. And remember, they're there to defend the Constitution, and that's what you bring in. You've got to make that point. As a matter of fact, there's a paper that we shared last week put out by Gorsuch. I'm trying to remember where I put it. Let's see.
Anybody the raw information is in there on the link I gave you a few minutes ago on your Skype.
Okay, well, where about is it? I guess I'll open my Skype. You don't know what it's under the blue bar? Let's see.
It's down through there. They reformat it when they sent out that letter.
Okay. Jan, if I called you, would you be able to tell me where it's at?
Well, here it is on this link, but we do have it on our page. Look at it. I'll find it on our page and I'll put it up out here on the desktop so you can see it, and I'll make it. I'll let you know. I'll just yell it out that, hey, there it is, Kathy. Okay. So I'll get it for you shortly.
You mean tonight?
Yeah.
I'm just on my phone tonight, so I would have to while I watch the replay of it.
No, I'll tell you where to get it. I'll put it on my desktop for others to see where it's at, and at the same time, I'll tell you what link it, where to find it on the website. So I'll let you know.
So if I'm just on my phone, when you say you'll put it on your desktop, I won't be able to see your desktop if I'm just on my phone.
I'm going to tell you where it's at. I think I just realized where it's at. Let's see. Details. Okay, here it is. Okay, if you click on the blue, come under the blue, on the blue bar, you highlight Education Starts Here. Okay?
Yep.
You come down to Law. Okay, highlight Law. And then you move over and then you click on Court Forms and Procedures. Court Forms and Process. Now, I know you know where that page is because we've got other things there.
Yep.
This page used to be one of the few pages we have that you have to be a member to see, but we just recently did away with that so everybody can get all the pages. The only pages, they can't join any of our courses without first becoming a member, and that's just the way the site is set up. But anyway, you'll find it under Court Forms and Process. You click on that, and it's very short. You only come down just a wee bit. You'll see Judicial Notice is a form of evidence. It's a PDF copy of that case. Now, remember, this is not a case that it was actually written in. They did speak about the case, but the bottom line is this case caused Gorsuch to put out a judicial notice to all federal judges. Now, I'm going to follow up on this and confirm this myself because I didn't really, I trusted the website I went to. But I'm going to go out and confirm it to make absolutely sure, maybe even get a better understanding on how this is. But once the judicial notice goes out from the United States Supreme Court, every federal judge gets it, and every federal magistrate gets it too. And this is the order, okay? And the crust of this whole thing is says, it is my immediate, this is Gorsuch talking, it is my immediate demand, wish, and order that you restore all that has been unlawfully taken without unconstitutionally mandated, due process. All past cases that bypass the common law are unlawful. And he even refers in his language here to a court of record. So that is something you definitely want to bring in for a judicial notice from the United States Supreme Court to that judge and the federal judge. You want to get it into the paper.
Okay, so I should look under court forms. I should look at something that mentions Gorsuch, right?
Yeah.
No, when you come into the, let me go back. When you come under into the page where Education Starts Here, Law, and then Court Forms and Process, all you got to do is come down a little bit. There's a couple paragraphs. Right under the paragraphs, you'll see, click here for more details and to order the book. And then you also, the very next thing is judicial notice is a form of evidence. Okay, PDF.
So that's what I'm looking for. Judicial notice is a form of evidence.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's
and right. So I don't go to the hearing on February 12th?
No. You always go to the hearing. You have to get this paperwork in, serve it accordingly as you've been taught, and file it in the courts, make sure you have a notice on the cover, and take a copy with you to the court, go to the court. Unless the court notifies you that you don't have to go, you go. And when you go, the court case should already have been shut down. You just want to be there to protect yourself. So you want to go in there, and they'll probably tell you, well, your case isn't going to be heard because it's in the federal courts hands right now. And if not, if they try to push it forward, you got a copy. You have also the proof that they were served, the judge was served, the court was served, the prosecutor was served. So everybody's been served. You serve them accordingly. And then you bring all that proof into that court, and you say, and if they try to continue and go forward, they know they can't. You got to let them know. You can't go forward. I move this into federal court. That has to be decided first. Because you don't have jurisdiction.
Okay. The reason I wanted to go, they just informed me today that my bail was forfeited. I think that's the word she used. So when I was arrested and spent about 10 hours in jail, I posted bail, and she just told me that my bail was forfeited because I missed a hearing.
And I've told you that before. You never miss a hearing. Unless, well, if it's impossible, of course, it's impossible. You get proof of the impossible. But,
I missed a hearing because of all of the hearings over my husband's murder. It was not deliberate.
Right. Well, you're going to have
by any means.
And they come out to arrest you, so you got to be careful. You want to get this paperwork done quickly.
Okay, let me.
For you to come to court to incarcerate.
They
you.
Would have dismissed this last month. They were willing to dismiss it, but I would have had to pay court fees. I said, no, I don't want to pay any court fees. They said, then the only way to avoid court fees.
Hold on. I think I told you this before, and maybe if not you, but I told others. And, you know, when we talk, this is education for everybody. Okay. But listen, I would have paid the court fees and then sued them. That's what I would have done. And that's what you always look at. You want to get out. You don't want to be at risk of going to jail. Okay. So if you can pay a few dollars.
I'm not.
And you could sue them.
I'm not at risk for. Okay. So. The reason I wanted to go to a hearing is because I wanted to question my accusers. That's the whole reason for this hearing that was supposed to be today, where I was going to question my accusers.
It's too dangerous, okay? You, and realize that for next time. It's always too dangerous. If they've arrested you once, and then you want to say, well, okay, I'm not going to go along with them. Right now, they got a bad taste in their mouth, and you're a target now. And, you know, and they can't be trusted. These people are evil, from my opinion. The whole court system is corrupt, entirely corrupt.
Well, I'm certain I can still drop the case because they tried again to get me to.
Do whatever you got to do to get yourself out of risk. Once you're out of risk, you do the suit. If they put you through the court process, then take them into federal court, of course. So, but we've got other people on the call also, if there's anything else.
Well, I didn't understand that before. So
okay.
If they'll drop the case. So I will call the prosecutor tomorrow, and then if they'll drop the case, I agree then.
Right.
That's what you're suggesting?
If that, absolutely, just to get yourself, look, they've incarcerated you. They won't think again.
Okay.
They won't think twice about incarcerating you. If you piss them off, they do evil things. That's who they are. That's what they do. They don't even, they have no conscience in this whole thing. It's been seared. They don't care. Okay, so yes, you get yourself out of harm's way and then sue them. And you can take get your education a little better and work on your papers and perfect your papers. And again, like I said, you write a paper, you read it 10 times, you perfect it 10 times, and I even go beyond 10 times. You'll find corrections to be made, changes of phrase here, a word here, maybe not say this, but say that, whatever. But you just want to regurgitate that case, your paperwork, over and over and over again before you actually file it. You want to perfect it. But with that, we've got to move.
Well, I'm not. If they drop the case, I'm not going to be moving it to federal court for cause, correct?
No, that's correct. You'd be suing them if that's what you want to do. But then you have to be able.
I can sue them at a later date.
Absolutely. You don't have to sue them now. You got to be careful.
Okay.
This statute of limitations on it, but there's no such thing as statute of limitations in a court of record when you file that. They'll deny that, and in state courts they probably don't even know that because they're not, well, again, they don't understand the common law, nor do they want to. But in any event, look for that statute of limitations. You just don't want to have to debate and argue another point. Okay? So with that, I got to move on to our next court.
John?
Yeah.
Can you take the international call from Amelia next? It's the plus 34 call.
Okay, yep. Let's take
Thanks.
That. Okay.
Thank you, John.
You got it, Kathy. Okay, let me unmute 34. Do we have a first name?
Amelia.
Amelia, you got
Hello?
The mic. Looks like you're unmuted. Where are you calling from?
Hi.
How you doing?
I call from Spain.
Spain? Okay.
Yeah, my name is Amelie Apuy.
Right.
Yeah, I have a daughter. She made 14. She's brainwashed by the state. She's under tutor. She's with the social services in an orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
And before she was placed in a care family, there was a problem with the father. I suspect there's no certainty, but I suspect that he made some touch sexual abuse on her. So she ran away from that care family, and she ended up in the orphanage. And in the period of 1 year and a half, she was brainwashed to be a man. She believed this LGBTQ, agenda.
Something.
And she already started with puberty blockers in October.
How
and,
old is she, by the way? How
and
old is
she? So there is a... There's everything against me. Everything. My family is against me. The people from the common law court, they know this. They never gave me any name, any hint, any forum or whatever. I was also asking at least to 7 so-called lawyers, and everyone is afraid because they say you can't go against the big pharma. Plus, the social services is too much. I'm afraid I cannot defend you. So, my question is, I have a couple of questions. I have a letter with 30 days to answer if I'm opposing to this gender affirmation care that they call. And so, my question is, how can I stop this, or at least win some time?
Let me ask you some questions. How old is she to begin with?
14, I said.
14. Okay, yeah, I think you did say that. Okay, so she's 14. And you're in Spain, you say?
Yes, my daughter is in Switzerland, Basel.
I missed that. She's in
under
Switzerland?
Under Swiss law. As far as I know, with 14, she can already sign and give her informed consent in brackets.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, gender dysphoria is a mental illness. It was withdrawn from the list of mental illness by the WHO, her organization, which is an ONG. And, of course, they are all under this command. And I obviously, they just say 20 times that it's reversible, which is a lie. And
Okay, well, I'll give you some thoughts, but, you know, again, I don't know anything about Switzerland or Spain. If it's a common law court, if they're claiming that, then they're you're under the common law, then you go to maxims. And let me ask you a question. Do you think this is evil, what they're doing as far as these things? You think this is evil, right?
First of all, they hide me that she was jabbed twice with COVID vaccine. They always deny.
I'm trying to help you. I'm asking you a question. You do see this as being evil, correct, what they're doing?
It's demonic, of course.
Demonic, very good.
Yeah.
Are you a Christian, or do you, what religion?
Oh, my God. I know all the Bible. I read it many, many times. I was raped myself by my grandfather, and I searched for God.
Make this a religious issue, okay? This is against your religious beliefs. Now you have to think.
Oh yeah.
You have to think about that. How you're going to couch that? Do you have the ability to write papers, or do you have to get a lawyer, or Do you have a lawyer, or what's the deal on that?
No, nobody wants to defend me. They are afraid when they know what it's about.
You are in
they
case.
Don't want to continue.
I understand. There are cases I've been somewhat involved with where that kind of thing takes place with lawyers. But let me ask you another question. Do you have any knowledge of the law? Do you understand due process? Do you understand the law?
Of course. I understand many things, yeah. Under ecclesiastical law, I have an ex-priest that want to help me. And under law of the air, I learned that you can make some movements.
Okay, look, you don't want to go in there with things you're going to learn on the Internet. You're going to learn a lot of garbage on the Internet, it's not going to be helpful for you. You want to really go in and learn the common law. I don't know of any place other than what we teach is the common law. If there's another place, that's fine. Now, you say you have someone who knows the law and could write your papers, or you don't know? Or you can do it, one or the other. Can you write papers?
Well, I know how to make an affidavit.
Okay, well, that's not sufficient enough, but it's a start. An affidavit is the beginning of a court case anyway, and an affidavit unrebutted rules the court, and all that's necessary really for a prima facie case is an affidavit. So, and that's in common law. You get into the civil law and all of the other stuff that they pose a lot of problems and a lot of resistance to that. But nevertheless, that's where you start with that. Again, when our children, we need to teach our children so when they become adults how to access the courts. This is something that people should be taught, children should be taught in schools so that everybody can take care of their own legal business. But the only thing I can suggest to you, do you have someone to help you that understands due process? I think you said you had someone that was going to help you at least write papers or something.
Yes, I am in the process. They give me a good contact. The Sane is a first time on the 11th of January 2024. We sued the King of Spain and the President Sanchez.
Okay, so you have someone who can write papers. You have someone who can write papers.
And in this group, I found somebody that's going to see me next week. It takes time, you know.
I understand. Okay, that's number one. Number two, you might want to suggest to them, again, maybe they're an expert in the common law. Maybe they understand and they don't need a further education. But maybe they do, too. And if they do, we have a course here. Anybody who knows the law should be able to fly through this course real quick, but at least they'll be able to pull out the nuggets that they would need to win this kind of a case. And the key thing on this case, ultimately, is to make this a religious thing to begin with. Okay, number one. Number two, even though this is Switzerland, what's the position of Spain as far as the age of a child being able to make their own decisions?
It's very similar. They both, Spain and Switzerland, allow a 14-year-old
guy
with understanding, of course. But gender dysphoria is a mental illness, and it should block all kind of capacity, you know?
Right. Well, absolutely. And the other thing that you want to make your point in the case is that all these things are moving so quick, and all of a sudden the solution means to go change the sex of your child in order to deal with the problem or something of that nature, whatever that is. That's ridiculous. The point is you've got to make that part of your case and lay it out that it is ridiculous, okay? And besides that, these people don't have, well, they're denying you a right to see her. So, again, you have a right as a mother. That's your child, your flesh and blood. Again, another point of the case you're going to want to make. But that's all I can help you with is those couple of things. But, again, I'd make a big thing on a religious position.
Okay, I see that. What can I do if my own child, she said she hates me because I don't want to affirm her? Despite I write a letter, they already started with, when I came to Spain, after 1 week, they sent me the letter to already start with the puberty blocker. So all my job, I was four months in Switzerland, and I was talking with my daughter almost every day. And she promised me she will give me 1 year to study and arrange my life and come back to Switzerland because, my personal problems.
That's another thing you want to make in the case. That's another point you got to make in the case. You're the mother. You're the best advisor she has. As long as you have some relationship with her and she's willing to acknowledge that relationship,
that would be like alienation from them. Alienation, parental alienation would be, yeah.
Okay, well, anyway, that's all I could tell you on that. And are you able to see my desktop or no?
Look, I try 4 times to come into your meeting, but it asked me a meeting ID, which I don't have. I have an
ID. The meeting ID is NLA, National Liberty Alliance, NLA. That's the meeting ID.
NLA.
Right.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, so okay. When you can come in and next time. Now, if you go up to our, let me do this so everybody can see this anyway. I know you can't see it, but if you click on our Monday night call, okay, and you come down by tomorrow, usually Terry puts these calls up at night, or she'll put it up tomorrow, and you can go and re-listen to this. And if you go up to the mark of about... what time is it now? I can't even see. Hang on. Okay, it looks like it's 10:30. So if you go to about the 50-minute mark or so, you'll pick up this conversation and you'll be able to re-listen to all of the thoughts that I've given you. But that's about all
okay,
I have.
Okay, that's great.
Okay?
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay.
One more question. Can I send... my, at least the pediatrician and the endocrinologist assist and desist to fire them, so to win time, and they will stop to jab my daughter at least for a couple of months.
Who are you looking to fire?
I want to fire them to win time.
Yeah, but who are you looking to fire?
Oh, the pediatrician, because he jabbed my daughter twice with the COVID jab against my will and my knowledge.
Yeah.
And he's
jabbing I would sue him, but again, you know, I don't know how the courts are. The courts everywhere is probably horrible anyway. I mean, they've destroyed all our courts. And anybody running a court case, you want to drag your case out as much as possible to try to get it over to the other side. When I say the other side, I mean the other side of devolution. But this is something you're going to want to sue them. You should sue them right now. And once you sue them, you want to drag that as much as you can. Would that cause a problem for them to cease and desist? Because I don't think it will. But I would sue them anyway.
Okay. Just something also, I want to make public this problem. Can I show the face of the pediatrician?
What do you mean, on the internet?
Yeah, I want to say, this guy is jabbing my daughter against my will.
That would have to be your own decision. I can't say one way or the other. I know, well, I don't want to say what I would do in that case. That's a little chancy. Again, I don't know what the repercussions on that could be. So I don't know whether you want to jeopardize that right now. I would think about it seriously maybe a little later when you get a little more control of the situation.
Because I have support from this guy, which is a priest.
You said your daughter's agreeing with you, but now they're talking about something else, right? Look, in order for that doctor to have given her a shot, okay, did she accept that that jab, or was there a court order allowing that to happen?
There's no court order, no. Okay, and even they sent me a paper.
Hold on. Family Services then made the arrangements for that and pushed that forward, and they made the decision to order the medical services to give her the jab, correct?
They were grooming the child. I was going to the school.
I understand that, but what I'm trying to say, whoever, someone had to bring it to the doctor, to the hospital, to go through this process. That's my point. Find out who that person is. That's who you want to go after.
The things that I know is because I pulled the tongue of my own daughter.
If you have the ability to file the case and you can't get a name, then do a John or a Jane Doe, and then you're going to try to find the individual in discovery, and you would go after the individual in the place where they're working, because if it's the family services, then you'll address your paperwork to the family services to put them a notification, and you. I would start with a notice and demand. Again, all this we lay out in the course. You can also find a notice and demand up under education. Starts here, come down to law. Okay, and again, you when you re-listen to this, you'll be able to go through and follow along with this. But you come down.
Yeah, three notices, right?
Huh? What?
Yeah, three notices, and after this, then I can go further.
I didn't understand that. Three what? You said there was
send a notice and demand for three times.
Hold on. Okay. So you sent the notice and demand. And you followed the process. Either you learned it somewhere else or you learned it from us. There's 8 points that need to be made. You followed that process and they ignored it. And who did you address it to? Family services?
Oh, yeah. From Switzerland, yeah.
Okay, so you went after family services, you did a notice and demand, and in that notice and demand, you wanted to know the name of the individual who thinks that they had the authority to be able to do these things and move your daughter forward for this. I mean, the other thing is, in your case, you want to make the point, what is the big hurry? You know, this is something that's a huge decision for any individual to make, how much more for a child? And this is something that psychologists look at. I remember hearing about the sex changes years ago, and before they would perform anything on you, they go through a process. You have to go through a psychological evaluation. They got to look at your maturity in this case, of course, because it's a young child. There's all kinds of things that need to be done before they rush into something like this. What's the big rush?
Yeah, of course, but normally it's a period of 6 months. And each session were 1 hour. Now, with three only sessions of 15 minutes, they approve it. They run away of time.
Okay. Again, all I can tell you is
they are rushing.
I understand that. You want to find out all of the individuals. You do John Doe's on the institution here or family services there. After you've done your notice and demand, they didn't give you the names of the individuals, and then therefore you're doing a Jane Doe, and you bring it into a discovery to get the names of these individuals so you can sue them, and I'd sue them for everything they got and plus more. That's what I would do. Because this is just plain evil is what it is. All right, if you got someone that needs more understanding of the common law, they can come in and take the course. They should be able to fly through it very quickly because most of the course is due process. What kind of paperwork is necessary to file a case? What kind of paperwork is necessary to respond to a case? We can lay out all the forms and everything you need. We've got, I don't know, 20, 30, maybe more memorandums, and they, of course, can be, you can take pieces out of each of these memorandums and build your own memorandums of law to support your case. We've got a lot of stuff.
All right, thank you.
To go through and figure it out, okay?
Memorandum. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you from Spain, from Malaga.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll take
a lot.
You're welcome.
God bless.
You too, Godspeed. Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller here. Let's see, who did that open up there? Let's try clicking it again. I don't know why this ain't working. Let me try it one more time. Okay, Asula, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, star 601 if you're on a phone, and there should be a button enter the queue if you're on an app or browser.
Yeah. Good evening, John.
How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just have one question I forgot to ask about. Do we have to have an EIN in order to file the trust with our county?
Well, the thing is you don't need an EIN to do any of this except for opening a bank account. So you're going to have to get an EIN
for
a bank account. And,
Okay.
Yeah, but you don't need one to create the trust and file your trust.
Okay, but we do have to file it with the county where we're in.
No, I'm thinking about this now. That was a misstatement. You don't want to file. The only thing you're going to do is create the trust, and the trust exists. And you know, the last thing you let me think about this a minute. Yeah, I don't think you're going to want to. You definitely don't want to file the whole thing because you don't want to file who's the beneficiary of the trust.
Right. I was wondering about that because it's a common law, right?
Right. That's
common law, yeah.
That's the thing you got to be careful with. So when you put together the paperwork, there's so much paperwork that you can file without exposing that. Just the fact that it's a trust is the key thing. And so the basics of the trust you'd file, but you're not going to file the detail of the trust. And you're going to open it up as, if you need to open a bank account, you open it up as a, of course, as a trust. And that's where you'll need that. Other than that, if you're not planning on opening up a bank account, then you just secure it yourself and you're good.
Okay, but is it necessary to open a bank account, though?
If you're going to be doing, well, you're starting off, you have to put something into the trust, okay?
Okay.
You have one individual that presses forward for the trust, and then you have an individual that is the trustee, usually two trustees if possible, and then of course the beneficiary.
Okay.
All right.
So we had a EIN we applied for, but it was in the other business, so we can just change.
You can't,
the name of what we have now, right?
No, you're going to want to open a new one. This is going to be
open.
And the paperwork that's filed with this is very, very minimum as far as information is concerned. You should get all that information in the instructional papers that I showed you, or you know about also. Under the education starts here, law, and then form.
Right, I read through that. That was really, beautiful. And it's really, well done. So that was my question. I just want to find out if we need an EIN in order to, file
only,
something.
Only if
with
you're going to open up a bank account, you need an EIN.
Okay. All right. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Thank you. All right. Again, anybody wants to get into the queue, we only got one other person left in the queue, *601, or click the button if you're on an app. All right. Thank you, Azula.
Thank you.
Let's see. Someone from Miami, Florida. What's your first name?
Hi, I'm Benjamin. Actually, I'm from Oklahoma.
Oh, from Oklahoma. How you doing?
Okay. My mother was in an abusive guardianship case, and 2.5 years later and $500,000 later, she was found out not to need a guardian. And I have the violations and all the illegalities, such as one of the evaluators for my mother charged her $8,000 for the evaluation, and then we couldn't find her after that, and other violations, especially one lawyer I'd like to go after. And I heard that...
Well, you mentioned guardianship. I missed that as far as who was... What's the relationship in this guardianship?
My mother, they wanted to put a guardianship on my mother.
Oh.
Unfortunately, she died 4 years ago. And so...
So they're coming out... They're coming out to put a guardianship on a person that's already passed away.
No.
This was done
in... It started in November of 2017. It ended in... April of 2019.
Okay, and how did they get guardianship? Who was assisting your mother at the time? You or a brother or sister, or what was going on?
I was living with my mother at the time. I came back to live with her.
Okay, and how old were you at that point in time?
How old was I?
At that time, yeah.
Oh, I see. That would have been in 2017. So that would have been. About 57, 58, I don't know.
Okay, so you're a grown individual, you're in the 50s, okay. And you were taking care of her, and then you just busted in, so to speak, and took control of her? Is that what happened?
No, I came to live with her. There was nothing going on. But I made a stupid mistake and told my brother that my mother had some memory issues. But her judgment was perfect, according to medical psychologists. She had a slight memory issue, so he decided to take matters into his own, in his own hands. And since she had $750,000...
That's why they try to take control of that, and they get fiduciary authority. They usually go to probate court to do that, which is, I presume, what they did. They took it to probate court. Now, your brother forced this into probate court, or was he trying to take guardianship?
He was trying to take guardianship case. My cousin, the lawyer, was on his side, and the judges didn't want to take it, but he forced it.
Okay.
He got some judges to take it.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. Your brother took guardianship, or he tried to take guardianship, and the court gave guardianship to a lawyer or to your brother?
To a lawyer.
Okay. Now, your brother, so guardianship was given to a lawyer. What fiduciary authority, you got to look at the paperwork to see if they had fiduciary authority to pass that guardianship over, number one. And at that time, were you trying to take guardianship?
Well, after the case was started, I wanted to take guardianship.
Right. Okay. Yeah, well, look, this is a difficult case to battle. You really have to lay it out. But, again, they do this often. Anybody that's got money that's elderly, they definitely want to hide it or move it into their children or do a trust to just get it out of there, because this is what happens all the time. Courts are full of this crime. Okay. They look for victims, people who have money, elderly, and then they seize control of them. I hear so many cases about this, and a lot of these cases are done even without other siblings getting involved, just that they come in and adult services gets involved or something. But they look for this kind of thing. It's just, this is how the evil people make their money.
So I've heard from numerous sources that people take lawyers' bonds and take it down on the private side. Have you ever heard of this and it being successful with this method?
Say it again. You heard what?
From sources that people like to take the lawyers down on the private side by taking their bonds.
Absolutely. Best way to do it. File a notice and demand, and demand is oath and bond, not just the bond, oath and bond. And then start from there. But again, you have to build the case. You have to get all the information and discover on how you can go about winning this case. I mean, I don't want to just shut this thing off. So you have to kind of sit down and see if you can win this case, because your brother is involved. He's blood. Is your brother, at this point, it doesn't matter whether he's older or younger. I mean, they're both adults.
But my brother is, the case is over already, so why would he be involved?
Because he's the one who...
I'm not going after him. I'm going after the lawyers.
Okay, the question, let me get back to the question again. Did the brother give fiduciary authority to the judge or to the lawyer, or did the judge seize control and give it to a lawyer? That's the question.
My brother never had control of anything. The lawyer appointed a temporary guardian, and he took $350,000 illegally out of...
That's how they rob people. They rob elderly this way. This is all the time. This is everywhere across the United States. It's a huge problem. It's a major problem. The people need to wake up to this problem, as they need to wake up to a lot of these problems. And if they don't, it's only going to get worse. So, yes. Now, here, let me go back again. You or your brother did not give any authority to a judge to give, because a judge has to give it, to a judge in order to give the authority, fiduciary authority, onto a lawyer. Who gave that fiduciary authority onto the lawyer? Was it a court decision, and did they initiate it on their own, or did your brother push and kind of sign off on this kind of a thing to do it?
I would have to look at the records, but I'm pretty sure that the judge ordered the
find out if your brother gave the court the authority to do it. Someone's got to give fiduciary authority. That's the point. The other point.
It was the judge. He wrote it in the December 7th order, I remember.
But who brought it into the court to give the authority to the judge to give the fiduciary authority to someone else? That's the question. How did it get into the court?
How did the court case start?
Yeah, how did it get initiated? Who brought it into the court?
Oh, my brother filed papers, and that's how it started.
Well, that's kind of a shaky situation for you now. You're going to have to look into that papers, get copies of all that stuff, find out what actually went on. I don't know that you can really win this case, although every one of these cases is a robbery case, every single one of them. And if you can seize control of what they did with the money that your mother had, you can probably trace it back and show all kinds of fraud. And it's really disgusting. They just spend everything that's on it between the judge and whoever the fiduciary authority is given to. It's a wink and a nod and all that.
Well, I have a whole list of stuff, illegalities. I have to just source it and document exactly where it was. One of the of things was that the judge made my mother's chosen lawyer to lower his fees. His fees were outrageous because they were not customary according to the for this kind of case. And the lawyer went to appeal it.
Is this the fiduciary lawyer, or is this a lawyer that your mom used?
My mother hired this lawyer so she wouldn't get a guardian. So the judge made him lower his fees, and he appealed the case.
He became the guardian, right?
No, he was not the guardian. They chose somebody else to be a guardian pendant they like. Okay. So this, my mother's lawyer charged my mother at least $20,000 for him to appeal his case so he could get more money and to send it to the printer so he could write up his case properly. So isn't that illegal?
Well, not the way they figure it out, but of course the whole thing is evil. The amounts of money they charge, everything is evil about this thing. Justice is not available in the United States for anyone who doesn't realize that. So, the only thing you could do is, if you want to pursue this, is you have to really do some heavy-duty investigation from the day one and get every paperwork, anything that transpired concerning this case under any of these situations, right up to all of the court hearings. You need to get everything. Then you need to sit down and evaluate the case to see how, if you can win that case. So that's the problem. Before your mother died, did they exhaust all the money? And if she died, was there anything left over that was inherited, or did the court and the lawyers?
I had some people helping me, so that we wrote a letter to the annuity company to don't give up the money. Otherwise, they complained in court that they couldn't get the money. So I'm working on that to get them inheritance.
There's some money laying around that is rightfully belongs to the siblings, I guess. I guess your father's gone, right?
So it's just, I'm working on that, yes.
Okay, well, anyway, before you go to war, you need to evaluate to see if you can win that war. Otherwise, it's just a waste of your time, and you just got to move on.
That sounds like a good plan. I think I can, because people I associate with them can, and I want to do this. So.
All right. All right, well, that's all I can help you with. You got to dig deep and figure out what's going on. So.
Okay, I appreciate that, because someone said that they've never heard it. They said they hear people talk about it, but they've never actually seen it done. Have you ever seen it actually work?
Absolutely. I haven't necessarily seen it work, because we've gone after judges, and the judges hide them, and they deny everything. They throw you out on Rule 12. They do all kinds of things. They refuse to give the oath and their bonds and so on and so forth. Now, you're going after a lawyer, so that's kind of a different situation. And that lawyer has to file his bond and his oath somewhere. You need to find out where that is. And then you go after the bond. There's instructions on some of this. So you can go up to our page. We do have instructions and information on bonds, seeking bonds, writing papers to get the bonds, doing the notice and demands and all that stuff in our course, Court Access in the Commonwealth. which you find under education starts here. Let me see if I can get this thing going here. There it is. Education starts here. Come down to court access in the common law. Click on that. You can watch the first class for free. And if you're interested, we only charge $125 for the course, but you're going to get a law course, a real law course. Now, if you go and do that, that's one thing you want to do. The other thing is if you don't want to take the course, we do have something under law. Okay, you come down under Education Starts Here, come down to Law. And when you highlight the law, you come over to Court Forms and Process. That's the page we're on with Kathy and others. And if you come down here, here it is, Demand for Oath and Bonds. Okay, there's a couple of ways to do it. There's one way to do it in a court. There's another way to do it through what's called a notice and demand, which is what you're doing outside of court. But again, if you're going to do a notice and demand to get their bonds and their oath, you're going to want to do the investigation to discover how you would couch your complaint and put it together. Because, justice is all about the facts, law is really common law. Common law is really common sense. It's that simple. It doesn't get any more complicated than that. That which is right and just. Okay? There's a maxim out there that says for every injury there must be a remedy. That's it. That's the facts. That's the truth. That's the law. A man is innocent until proven guilty. That's actually a common law law. A lot of our basic principles are built upon common law. Even American jurisprudence is built upon that, but they ignore it all. And again, it's a uphill battle. But you're going to go through the administrative process outside of the judicial process. But again, you've got to make a case. And if you go without you got to make a case that you can win. You got to get your evidence. You got to dig everything up.
Oh yeah, I'm working on. Yeah, thank you. I think it'll work. Thank you very much.
All right. Okay, we got one other person came into the queue. Ross, you got the mic. How you doing?
Hey, John. I need someone else to do it for to be the county organizer because I can't drive or I'm not independent enough to do it on my own.
Okay. So you need someone to assist you, is what you're saying, right?
Yes, and I don't want to force them to be the leader, so I...
Did you put your name and number up on the board for people to contact you in your county or not?
What you were saying, I did click the county...
Did you go up to our... page in order to put your name as a someone for the Committee of Safety, as a contact for the Committee of Safety. What state and county are you in again?
Oregon.
You're in Oregon. Okay, and what county in Oregon?
Clackamas County.
What is it?
Clackamas County.
Okay, all right. Okay, yeah, you're already up here. All right, well, look at, hopefully we're at the verge of hitting critical mass. Hopefully, more people are going to get involved and we're interested in saving the republic and taking control of our government, because we can control the courts, we can control political process. We just need people to get the knowledge on how to do that, and by developing committees of safety and enough people involved to actually go out and do it. We need probably 20, 30 people bare minimum in a committee of safety, but if you do it according to the plan we have at that point, you'll build that up real quick. You'll hit 100 easily, very quickly, maybe within 6 months or a year, once you get moving on things, because, again, we have a plan on how you can do that. The thing is you got your name up here. Someone in your county may see it, give you a call, and then you can partnership with them. And you always want to get three or four people together, maybe a half a dozen, before you really start to really work towards having your first real meeting. Up to that, it's really a lot of planning, conversation, and organizing yourself and getting educated and trying to get more and more people to assist you. But once you get going and you have your first seminar, that will for, you know, you should be able to build up quite quickly to 20 people or so, maybe more, 30, depending on how many people you invite. You know, and most people that get invited, you know, do want to get involved. The key to success is keeping them involved. You have to have your meetings once a month. You got to have you know, a process and a procedure moving along. People have to see that it's going somewhere. They need to be getting educated as you're going through this process, and then you'll build a real good solid committee of safety, which is the true committeemen, the true committeemen that decide who goes on to the ballots and everything. How to recall people that are not paying the law, you know, we teach all of that. But again, something hopefully someone will call you soon. We did get a list from Jan, right? Did they close or no?
So Ross, would you tell him what you what did he tell you? What did he tell you?
He's basically said the great patient is for people to call you
to show interest.
Interest.
Right. Okay. Yeah, you want to get people to help you. Look, no one could do this on their own. And the whole thing is about building a group of people in the county that have an interest to bring the law back. That's what it's all about. And you'll find them as they come here. They'll probably find you or anybody in your county. So, you know, just be patient. And sometimes it takes a while to get things going. And, you know, we got a lot of committees of safety that are just slow and moving. And that's the way it is, because it's relationships and it's talking and getting involved in your community. So. Okay?
He says, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Ross. Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess we've come to the end of our program tonight. So it's a little after 11 now, so we're going to close down. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Good night, everybody. Thank you.